You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
This piece was brought to you by Roberta's, robertaspizza.com.
Welcome to HRN Happy Hour. It's 5 o'clock somewhere, and somewhere is Bushwick. I'm Kat Johnson, your host, joined by my other host, Katie Mosen-Wadler.
Hey, Kat. Happy Thursday.
What up?
What up?
And also, obviously, we have Hannah Forden here, our program manager.
Happy Thursday. Nice to see you.
Yes.
I missed you today.
We've been out of the office today. Sorry, Hannah.
We've been running all over. Thanks for holding down the fort, Hannah. We missed you, too.
I just said I don't go to Manhattan, and we were definitely in Manhattan like 30 minutes ago. Like,
and we're going tomorrow.
And I'm going back right after this.
It's Saxelby Scholar season, so I have been in Manhattan a lot, which is nice because we get to go hang out at the Food and Finance High School with our friends over there. But it really throws me for a loop to be taking the train into the city multiple times a week. Mm-hmm. I don't know what's going on. I don't know where I am.
I got nothing for you, Kat. Shout out to fellow Manhattanite, our awesome engineer in the booth, Amanda Wang. Hey-o.
Woo-woo.
Woo-woo. We're half and half, actually, today. Manhattan versus Brooklyn.
Yes.
I'll have you know.
It's
represent.
Even. It's even. We are so excited. Our guests today are from neither Brooklyn nor Manhattan.
What?
They are
what else
from
is there?
Way out of town. The other Manhattan, as we call it. We
I
don't call it that.
It's actually the other Brooklyn.
East Nashville is. There's a hint, guys. Our guests are from Nashville, Tennessee today. We have Brian Riggenbach and Mikey Corona, the duo behind The Mockingbird in Nashville, Tennessee. Welcome.
Hi. Yay. Thanks for having us.
Yeah. Thank you for being here.
This is exciting.
When did you get to New York?
We got in yesterday, so kind of hit the ground running.
And so far, what's it been like?
So far, so good. We had a lot of interviews and, you know, I'm filming tomorrow, so it's been great.
What are you filming? Can you say?
I can say that I'm competing on Beat Bobby Flay.
Yay!
Does that mean you're going to try to beat Bobby Flay?
I will crush him.
I expect nothing less.
I love it.
I can't wait to
watch
it.
It's going to be super crazy, though, because I have a crush on Bobby Flay. So
I thought Brian said for a second.
No.
I'm going to crush him. I was like, I have a crush on Bobby Flay.
Yeah. Are you going to crush
the crush the competition? Oh, he's going to crush the crush.
Ooh, sure. Yeah. That's the spinoff show.
Oh, that would be so sexy.
We are so excited to talk to you guys more. Really quick hint about some of the things we're talking about. So your partner in The Mockingbird is one of our favorite people of all time, Manit Chauhan.
Yay. Yay.
Yes.
So,
hi, Manit.
Hi, Manit.
We
hi,
love
Manit.
You.
She better be listening to this. Okay, so yes, more to come soon. I can't wait to hear all about the restaurant because the website's beautiful and I've never been to the restaurant itself, but I'm a sucker for a good website restaurant.
Thanks.
Restaurant website.
Appreciate that.
Absolutely. Okay. But first, we have a couple quick announcements.
I'm going to pass on this one because it's sold out and I don't want to disappoint anybody after the mezcal fiasco.
Too bad, guys.
Okay. Sorry about that. You missed all the fun. But guess what? There's more fun coming up. So questions for you. Have you ever wanted to open a restaurant?
Maybe.
Have you ever wanted to launch your own food brand?
Yeah.
Have you ever wanted to dive into the world of food media where we all are swimming?
For sure.
Well, first thing, you might be a crazy person. But second thing, we're going to tell you how to do it. So come join some of our favorite food world insiders for a very special live podcast event presented by HRN. Prevented. You guys, it's been a long day. Okay, and it's going to be at Haven's Kitchen in Manhattan, which, if you haven't been, is just this amazing oasis of all things cooking and food-related. And it is owned by our very own Allie Kane, host of In the Sauce, who will be our gracious host that evening. The evening is going to be emceed by the incomparable Zara Tangora and Bretton Scott, who are the hosts of Life's a Banquet, which if you aren't listening, I don't know what you're doing with your life. And they're going to lead us through tales of the good, the bad, the transformative from Dana Cowan, host of Speaking Broadly, Eli Sussman and his brother Max Sussman. Eli is the host of The Line, and together they co-own restaurants and a brand new food brand. And of course, Ali Kane, our host, will also be speaking with a special guest to be announced soon. So I hope you'll be there. It's going to be informative. It's going to be funny. It's going to be entertaining. And there will be a lot of really delicious snacks. I just learned there will be a beautiful spread of smoked salmon from our friends at Paris Gourmet, who we love. So check out tickets. It's going to be June 3rd at 6:30 p.m. You can buy tickets on Eventbrite, and you can find information on our social media or on our website.
Okay, so that's going to bring us right on into our headlines.
Yep.
I'm hungry for salmon. Our new season is here. We are in full swing. And some of our shows returned with an eye towards summer reading. You got to get ready for your beach reading lists. Yep. So, of course, we turn to our stalwart show about food and books, Eat Your Words, where Kathy Irway gets in some tropical vibes when she calls up Alana Kizar. And I'm so sorry if I mispronounced your last name, because I have yet to listen to this episode, but it's on my playlist. Author of Aloha Kitchen, Recipes from Hawaii. Alana shares insights on why Spam is so beloved, definitely can vouch for that, why pineapples do not immediately make a dish Hawaiian, what makes poke so good, and so much more.
So are you saying that pineapple upside down cake is not Hawaiian?
I'm not saying that, but I'm not saying that.
Well, it's good either way. Also, keeping on the book's theme, on Feast Your Ears, Harry Rosenblum gets retro with guest Sarah Archer, author of The Mid-Century Kitchen. Do you ever wonder where those cool colors in the 50s and 60s came from, or why Tupperware wasn't a hit right off the bat, or what the kitchen of tomorrow looked like in 1957? You can tune in to Feast Your Ears to find out the answers to all of these questions.
That sounds right up my alley. I can't wait for it. So for a couple more book-focused episodes to check out, on Cutting the Curd, Diane Stemple interviews former New Yorker editor Emily Reese Nunn about her memoir, Comfort Food Diaries. And finally, on the food scene, Michael Harlan Turkell welcomes Emily Elise Miller, author of the newest Fight on Bible, Breakfast, the Cookbook, with nearly 400 breakfast recipes from over 80 countries, which sounds just really heavenly. What's better than breakfast?
Nope, nothing.
Can we all just agree that breakfast is best?
Should we start our interview there?
Yes.
Yes, please.
Brian and Mikey, thoughts on breakfast?
Breakfast.
Love it. Love it, love it, love it.
I have a love-hate relationship with it. We have a very busy brunch at the restaurant.
Oh, explain.
So we make all these fabulous pastries.
Oversized donuts.
Giant, like 8-inch donuts, and the flavor changes every week, and we've never repeated it.
8-inch donuts?
Yes. And our breakfast taco is like 14 inches, and it's flour.
It's one single taco?
It's one single just fat-ass taco.
I love you.
There's egg, there's potato, there's cheese, and beans, and chorizo are all stuffed in there.
Bless you.
And it is... It pays like homage to my hometown of Corpus Christi, Texas, because breakfast tacos are what I grew up on, and the bigger, like, the better there.
Everything's bigger in Texas.
For sure. And so I was like, we have to bring that here to Nashville, or there to Nashville. We're not here, actually. So Brian took a shot at it, and I was like, this tastes like home. Put it on the menu.
It's pretty fantastic. Oh, we sell a lot.
It's called Taco the Town.
So now that you let that cat out of the bag, can you talk about your menu and the names, please?
He's a pun factory. So just
get ready. Are they all coming from Mikey?
Yeah. So wow. I got one on the menu, and I was really proud of it. And then,
we changed it.
Brian, what was yours?
Mine was a braised lamb shank, and we called it Sheep Thrills.
I love it.
We love Sheep Thrills.
But is a lamb a sheep? Is a sheep a lamb?
Nobody
it's
knows.
It's a young lamb.
Is it though? Yeah.
It's a young sheep. I mean, a lamb is a young
you're
sheep.
You're allowed some wiggle room in the pun department, I think.
Yeah. I guess. Okay. Hey, listen.
Mikey's
a rigid pun generator.
Listen, I don't mean to be lactose intolerant, so
that one hurts.
It's like such a dad thing. So we used to run an underground supper in Chicago for like 8 years, and every month it was a different theme. And so Brian would create the dishes, and I would name them to go along with whatever theme was happening that month. And so when we opened our first restaurant, it was just instinctively like my duty to name the dishes.
It's like a reflex. Like
it is. I couldn't. I was like twitching. I was like, yeah. So when can I name him? When can I name him? When can I name him?
Do you ever rename a dish?
No. Good
question. That might confuse guests. Dish. Yeah.
It might confuse guests for sure.
I know sometimes when I make a really, really bad pun, then later I like think of the better one and I try to go back, yeah. But it's hard to go back.
It's
right?
Like a tattoo. That moment, I just got to like live past. With it.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So talk about some of the other dishes, either former or current, that have, I mean, I love all the names so much. Yeah. So I just want you to pick a few.
Like, don't worry, Brie Happy is like our version of mac and cheese. I'm sorry, of grilled cheese. And it's got this like wonderful chimichurri sauce on top of it. And it is just, it's all the things. It's like sweet. It's got some like acid. But the titles are designed to remind guests that life is too short. Like, you're here to have a good time. Food shouldn't be taken that seriously, although it is a serious nature for the kitchen and these are serious recipes, but the guests are here to have a good time. And so that's just kind of what that reminder is. So the Don't Worry, Brie Happy is very popular. The Flock Yes is like really popular at brunch, which is our fried chicken over house-made biscuits.
Yeah, house-made biscuits, a chorizo gravy gets poured over top.
Do you ever have customers who like order one thing and then they say, just kidding, no, the other one, just because they want to say all of the names back to you?
There was a customer I spoke with last week, and it was like this 15-year-old kid, and he has been for the past couple of years like coming up with puns that are food related. And so his parents were like, like my son belongs here with y'all. He might actually be your son. So I was like, son. He was like, dad.
Aww.
It was great. It was absolutely
fantastic.
Have
you hired him yet?
No, he's 15. I have to wait until he's a couple of years older.
Yeah.
I started working in a restaurant when I was 14.
Yeah.
That's a thing.
Really?
Yeah.
Get that kid a work permit.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't think about that.
Yeah.
I was in high school when I got a work permit in Corpus. I was a dishwasher, and I loved working. It was like the funnest thing.
Yeah.
So like, you'd go to school half day, right? And then
no,
the other half?
No, I went to school regular.
Really?
Yeah. I worked in a diner, which was like not great hours, but I worked in the diner on Friday nights and on the weekends.
What city?
South Berwick, Maine.
Okay.
Not, I'd call it a city would be a pretty far stretch.
Yeah, that is true. I guess you could. I should ask him if...
Yeah. You're welcome, kid.
Yeah. Young recruit. Yeah. Why not?
Yeah, you're welcome. Thank you.
Yeah. Because he said you're so busy at brunch. Like, get that help in there.
It's bonkers. Yeah. Like, within a matter of... Because we're open from, like, 10:30 to 2:30. And so within that, like, short amount of time, we're doing, like, 350 or 400 people. And it's...
Oh, my God.
I don't know if you know how brunch is, but people are... pretty hungover from like the day before, or they just wake up and they're like, I'm starving. I want all the things and I wanted them 5 minutes ago. So it's like,
well, yeah, I feel like any city with like a awesome nightlife is going to have like an equally awesome or not awesome, depending on how you look at it, like brunch crowd.
Like brunch in a music town.
Yes.
Yeah. It hurts to think about it.
For sure.
It's demanding.
Yeah. Do you only do it on the weekends or
is it? Yeah, just on Saturday and Sunday.
So how long has the restaurant been open, and did you start with brunch off the bat or did you phase brunch in?
So we've been open about a year and a half. It'll be 2 years in August, which is super exciting.
Yay.
That's close. You're close to 2 years.
Yeah, we're right around the corner. We phased into it. So we actually just started with Sunday brunch. Mm. And then due to like a city, they were like doing a water line or something. So we had to close on a Sunday. And so we did brunch on Saturday. Thinking, oh, that's fine. It'll be a one-off. Who comes to brunch on Saturday?
Turns out
everybody.
Turns out everyone does.
It's more popular than our Sundays.
Mm-hmm. It's crazy town. Wow. Yeah. It's so weird.
Yeah,
it's great as a business owner, but and I'm not mad. I'm confused. Every day, like we'll have the pre-shift, and there's people lining up at the door, and I'm like, it is 10:15 in the morning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Don't you have anything better to do with your life? No. It's great.
Yeah, they
come
do.
In,
they
give me your money.
They want your eggs.
they want that taco.
Do you take reservations?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
For brunch even?
You have to have reservations for brunch or else it goes on about an hour to an hour and a half wait or so.
Oh, gosh.
All walk-ins we send to the bar and that fills up within like 45 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, we did phase into brunch. So initially we opened for dinner and then did that for like 2 months or so, and then phased into lunches and then tacked on the brunch. Like, we didn't want to open like full swing with all shifts, because that is just a recipe for disaster, at least for us. Like, we wanted to get our legs with each shift first before like putting on other ones. So it was strategic in that sense, but we're in full swing now. Brunch, lunch, dinner.
It's the whole shebang.
Before we get into like other like nitty gritty restaurant, I want to hear like more of the backstory. Mm-hmm. But I have a kind of a question, burning question, because I think we know how like brunch and dinner food can differ a lot. But do you find that you have staff that is like brunch, like they can do brunch super well or like love doing brunch shifts, and then like conversely staff that's like, nah, I'm dinner?
Yeah, I think you definitely see
that. They're two different breeds.
They are different breeds of people, because one's like turn and burn and the other has a little more finesse and a little more suave to it.
Yeah. They're just so different from a guest perspective, imagine.
There's like a Flo and an Alice. Do you remember that show, Mel's Diner? Kiss my grits. But then like Alice was more like refined and like, Flo, you shouldn't do that. Yeah. That's the Flo Alice effect.
Mm. And who can deal with hungover people?
Flo. Yeah. Flo. She's like, oh honey, you're just gonna have to drink some coffee. You're not ready for another mimosa.
Sometimes people just need to be told.
Yeah, exactly.
Are there blue laws in Tennessee for weekend brunch time?
There were.
Okay.
Can you explain what blue laws are?
Who? Me?
Yeah, anybody.
They're like religious laws.
Oh, I've never heard it called that.
Alcohol.
Blue laws?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that was the term.
Serving until...
Like New York, you can't get a mimosa before noon on Sunday.
Yeah.
You can stay at the bar until 4 a.m. Yeah. But if you want to go have brunch like a responsible person at 10, you can't have a drink.
See, I'm from Alabama. I thought it was just Sunday.
Well, blue laws.
Got it.
Corpus Christi probably knows a thing or two about those.
Yeah, so. For sure.
Yeah.
But Nashville is the buckle of the Bible Belt.
Bless your heart.
Bless your heart. We recently just started selling wine in grocery stores. And now, as of this year, you can buy liquor on Sundays and wine.
Actually, not even as this year. It's like maybe the past 4 months or so.
Yeah, that's cool.
Very exciting. Yeah.
Party time.
We're just coming to the 21st century.
Welcome.
Well, you're way ahead of New York, so well done.
Okay, so let's wind way back. How did you guys meet, and how did you end up working with Manit on this restaurant concept?
So Brian and I met 15 years ago at a house party. We had both just recently moved to Chicago. Brian was going to the School of the Art Institute, and I was going to Columbia. So we were both studying the arts, and we were at this house party, and somebody was like, oh, there's somebody else that just moved here from Houston, Texas, just like I had maybe a month before that. And so I was like, oh, I've got to know them. I know everybody in Texas. And so they introduced us, and we just hit it off and kind of have been inseparable ever since. But we hung out for the first like 3 or 4 months, just waxing poetic about life and art and all of that other kind of stuff you do like in the early stages of a relationship. And we were just like buddies. And then Brian created this like 3-course meal for me one night. And no one had ever done that. I was, you know, in my early 20s, Brian in his earlier 20s. And I just thought it was like the sweetest thing. And so...
What did he make for you?
Well, the one dish I remember that we would prepare yearly for our pop-up suppers during Valentine's is a carrot star anise soup. And it just... I remember tasting it and I was like, this is life-changing. It was... It's just something so different and unique that I'd ever had. And you can almost just like taste the love in it. And so after that meal, we became official and became a couple. And it was a lot of fun. And so that's when I realized like, oh, you're not just a great like painter and, you know, fine arts artist. You're a great, you're a great
other
cook.
Skills.
Yeah. And so... We started having friends come over on Sundays because we were working as servers while we were going to school. And Sundays were the only days that we really had off and all of our buddies had off. So we would do these dinner parties for our friends. And slowly over time, it was like friends of friends started coming. And Brian would just make these huge spreads. And so it's like, we need to start a blog to follow this. And from that blog, people started contacting us, seeing how they can come to our dinners. And so I was like, we might be onto something. So we started charging and would invite strangers into our home once a month. And it started out with about 20 people or so.
Yeah, 20, 25 people. We had like an old brownstone. Mm-hmm. So it was hilarious. We had the whole second floor and we would just move all the furniture and set up these big tables with mixed match chairs and cook a 5-course dinner out of this little tiny kitchen the size of, you know.
Yeah, our bedroom became like a prep room.
There would be like an ironing board that we were like plating on. Oh,
yeah.
Two questions. Did you enlist friends to help you? And yes. Like what neighborhood were you in Chicago?
We were
in Lakeview.
Lakeview, yeah. Okay.
Also known as Boys Town.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So it was great. We did that for like 8 years. But for the first year, we had like 20 to 30 people coming and it was in our living room. So we would move all of our living room furniture into our bedroom closet. And like, it was just like our second bedroom was turned into a bar.
The New Yorkers in the room, our eyes are falling out of our heads right now.
Yeah, it was like...
You have a closet that fit furniture?
Oh, what does that mean?
And then you had another bedroom? No. You had the bedroom and another bedroom? Yeah, I don't get it. I don't get it.
It was like a folding chair and a, like,
yeah, it wasn't
a pink.
Like, yeah.
Crystal clear on the size of the bedroom. Yeah.
It wasn't like oversized, like really expensive
12
furniture.
12 t-shirts stacked in a corner.
Okay,
it
okay.
Yeah.
It was a it was bedroom like by name only.
1,200 square feet or so was like the size of our apartment.
Yeah.
That we were squeezing 30 people into with one bathroom.
Uh-huh. Totally up to code.
Totally up to code.
Totally legal.
Yeah. And so once we started getting that big, we were like, okay, we do have to become legit. So we started a catering company and we would prepare all of our foods out of a shared kitchen space, like an incubator kitchen in Chicago. And then we started renting out spaces to do these pop-up suppers. And whenever we couldn't rent a space, we would just take over an alleyway or a park and then hope that we wouldn't get busted. And set up tables and chairs and do these dinners for like 50 people at a time. And it was wild.
This
is
sounding like true life Hotbox. Have you seen the Lee Brothers new book?
No.
Called Hotbox. They went undercover as caterers in New York for 4 years.
Yeah. Like with like Sonia and Castle and like big firms.
Really?
Yeah.
It's going to be all too real for you.
Okay, good. I need to watch
Highly
this.
Recommend. So Brian, had you had like formal cooking training at this point?
No, I'm self-taught. No, I have a fine arts background.
Awesome.
On paper.
How did you get into cooking? And
cooking was huge in our family. Like we were always the house that hosted like Thanksgiving or Christmas or whatever. And, we'd prepare this just enormous spread. There'd be like 3 different types of turkey and like a whole side of fish and brisket, you know, like 30 sides, and one table would just be full of pies and then another table of desserts. I mean, we'd cook for a week and it was always kind of ingrained in me. And I took that and kept cooking and traveled a lot when I was much younger and, you know, learned to cook. Like I was in the Ligurian coast and learned how to make pesto from my friend's mom. And
well, yeah, because he dropped out of college and moved to Europe.
Fact.
Like every, like, you know, forlorn artist does. Like, I hate Florida, I'm leaving.
It's Florida, though.
Yeah. Where in Florida were you at the time?
I grew up in Naples, but
okay.
I went to FSU for a semester.
Oh, no. I went to Auburn. We don't like FSU.
It's okay.
Because you left and went to Europe.
Yeah. He's like, screw this.
Good decision.
I'm going to Italy.
Sold everything I owned and moved to Paris, and it was great.
Amazing.
Yeah.
And I was super poor, and I learned a lot of life lessons. So.
Yeah. And so, like, when we met, he had been back in the States, I guess, for like, 4 or 5 years or so. And he would, like, have, like, cut up bread and like charcuterie and cheese. I was like, this isn't queso. What the heck is happening here? And he was like, no, just like, I was like, it looks like a build your own like sandwich of sorts. Like, I don't get it. And he
right.
was like,
your queso is like really undercooked.
Yeah, your queso is not ready. So he just had a more sophisticated palate, like at a lot earlier age than like any of us did that were in our circle of friends. And so it was, he would like introduce this like these dishes and cuisine to us, and it was extraordinary. It still is. He still is, like, pushing boundaries. Like, you know, the couple of times I found, like, pork nipples in the freezer or, like, a whole rabbit in there. I'm like, what the H is going on here? This is disturbing.
Well, he, like, the rabbit came from a farmer friend of mine.
Sure.
As they do.
Yeah, yeah.
It was a rabbit. It was like
it's the size of our dog.
It is. Oh my God.
And it fell out of the freezer when he opened
the
door.
Yeah, and I was like,
and then when a rabbit is cleaned, it doesn't actually look that different.
No.
No.
Sweet bear and pet.
No, it doesn't.
But they taste so good.
I know. Well, they're one of the most sustainable meats that you can eat.
Yeah.
So they grow really fast.
Yeah. That was kind of a win-win.
But what about pork nipples?
I bought a whole side of pork belly from like in Chicago in like the meatpacking district. Like you can
he's like chasing me around the apartment with these
so I cleaned
pig
it,
boobies
so
and I was like no.
Pig
nips
I
were you saving
really
them for
hard.
Something in particular?
He just had
just
clean.
To chase
just
him around.
Terrorize Mikey. Okay, yeah,
just entertainment. Totally got it.
It's cheaper if you buy it with everything still intact because then you can clean it yourself. But it was still, like, it was very disturbing to see. And especially being chased around the apartment with it, I was, like, I was at my wit's end.
You really have to have, like, the weight of, like, how much is this going to harm my relationship versus, like,
how much am I going to personally enjoy
the
it?
The personal satisfaction, like, definitely outweighed that. Yeah. So.
Well, one of my jobs in high school, we made the best BLT ever, but we would buy whole sides of bacon. It was my job to clean it, which involves, like, taking a knife and kind of getting under this huge sheet of skin that still has like hair and nipples on it.
Yeah, sure.
And, yeah. I was like 16 and doing that. And,
see,
like,
I prefer the front of the house where I don't have to see all of that. And I just get like the beautiful, like finished product.
Like you appreciate the effort, but
yes.
Mm-hmm. It's like, wait, chicken doesn't come in yellow packages.
But... Yeah.
Yeah, that's...
At least you didn't have to kill it.
That is very true.
Ooh, boy. Yeah.
Anyway, how do we get on that dark topic?
I don't know.
But I'm gonna redirect. So the restaurant, the Mockingbird, will have been open for 2 years in August. Yes. How much earlier before the opening of the restaurant did you guys move to Nashville?
We moved actually about a year prior to opening. And then there was a series of delays.
Shocking.
But what
did you move to Nashville to open the restaurant?
We did.
Okay.
So we had the Yo Soy, this tangent-inducing underground supper club. Through that, Mikey had gotten, and at the time he had worked at a restaurant with Manit in Chicago. So we had known her and then kind of like tangentially kept in touch, but he signed me up for Chopped. I was on Chopped, and
which Manit didn't even know that
I was going to be the competitor.
No, because I would sign him up for any and everything I possibly could. We ended up on this show on Esquire TV called like Illegal Eater, where they like followed around these underground suppers from across the United States, and so like any and every like podcast or newspaper or television station I can get us into, like. I would sign us up for it because like we were doing something a bit different with being a pop and pop pop-up. It was like, it was something that like, I just wanted to like his talents to be shown on a larger scale. And so I sent in like an application on the Food Network and, I just filled in all the information for him, but I put his telephone number on there because if they called and asked some kind of like technique about how to take off pig nipples, I would be like, I don't know. I'm not Brian. Just kidding. Let me pass you the phone to him. So they ended up calling him, and he immediately called me and was like, what did you do?
Yeah. It's like, so I just cut off the horn with like Jessica from the Food Network.
What'd you do? Like,
but yeah. How surprised were you, Brian, to get that call?
I was legitimately surprised.
Really?
Yeah.
So you weren't just used to Mikey doing this to you at this point?
I mean, I was, but this was a different scale.
Okay.
I was like, I mean, come on.
Because even on our honeymoon, we were supposed to be on that show on MSNBC called like Restaurant Profit or Restaurant. It's almost like Shark Tank, but for restaurants. Mm. And you like go in front of these investors and they possibly invest in you. And we got to like the last phase where we had to send in like 200 pages of paperwork. And we were on our honeymoon in India. And I don't know if you've ever been to India, but finding a fax machine is like, especially in the south of India, that it's like kind of isolated.
It was very like Indiana Jones from the Lost Crusade.
Yeah.
Except trying to find a fax machine instead of the Ten Commandments.
Yeah. And we found one. It was like $1.50 per sheet to fax over. Oh, and we're like, God, this is going to cost us so much freaking money. So our majority of honeymoon budget went on faxing over those sheets. Oh. So he wasn't new to my antics. He's very well versed in them. But that one of going in national television with Chopped was, I think.
It was great.
So call went well.
The call went well. We got on Chopped, reconnected with Manit, and then she was like, hey, so we have this space in Nashville. Would y'all be interested in coming down? And I wasn't sure like how serious they were, if they just wanted to spend a long weekend with us. And then it turns out they were serious about opening a restaurant. So, you know, contractually, we worked around everything, came up with a concept, did all the...
Well, I think you're, like, skipping over all the nitty-gritty. Of course, there's, like, pros and cons, because we would have to leave Chicago, which that's what we had worked for 8.5 years for, is building a clientele so that we would eventually open our brick-and-mortar restaurant in Chicago, because that's where people knew who we were and knew our food. And so at the end of the episode, when Brian came out victorious, Manit was like, you know, we do need to talk. And so I was like... sure, let's definitely talk. Like, we've got some spaces picked out in Chicago. We've run some numbers on them. And she was like, well, just come to Nashville and we'll talk further. So I was like, okay. So of course, like, it's not good to talk numbers over the telephone. So it's in person that we're going to go over this. And so it was like, you know, we do have some spaces that we've been looking at. And she was like, put that away. She's like, if I were to invest in you, it's got to be here in Nashville that you live, because this is where I live. This is where my restaurant is. And if I'm going to invest in y'all, I want to be able to be there to help y'all if you kind of need some advice along the way. And it would be too hard to do that all the way from Chicago to Nashville. So we had to really seriously, like, go over what would be the most beneficial for us to do at that time, and if it was, you know, worth the risk of packing up our knives and lives and making Nashville our new home. But ultimately, you've met Manit when she asked you to, like,
it's hard to say.
How
no.
do you? Yeah.
Yeah, you can't. You know, when a celebrity chef is like, hey, I want to be your business partner in something that is your creation, and like, it's, you have full control over the menu, the beverage, like everything. Like, y'all, it's y'all's baby. I'm just here to flex muscles if need be. You kind of don't think too long and hard about it.
It's a pretty easy decision.
Yeah, yeah. It's like such a, I mean, what a mentor. Yeah.
You're very true about that. She is.
Let's take a really quick break. And when we come back, let's get more into like the move from Chicago to Nashville and then leading up to opening doors at the Mockingbird. We'll be right back.
Brandon Hoy, co-owner of Roberta's, a super duper awesome place. Roberta's is a very, 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 very proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. We're also super awesome. Thank you, Heritage.
We're back.
All right.
We learned something new just now.
We're just talking about regional... words to describe remote controls and or shoes. So, not important. What is important?
I think it's important.
So what is important? So you guys obviously had to make a really pivotal life decision to, I mean, Manit Chauhan is wonderful. We all love her, but still it's like a monumental sort of change to make after you've been building. So, you know, building up to this moment to open up your own restaurant in Chicago, and then this opportunity presents itself to head to Nashville. It's a great city, but it's different from Chicago. So what kind of, was there one thing or a few things that made you decide to take the leap?
I don't know if it was like one thing particular. I would say it was like a kind of gathering of different things we witnessed while we had gone to visit. I think we went about 3 or 4 times over a span of like 5 or 6 months or so. And we just ate our way through town and got to see what the existing culinary landscape was like and what we could add to it, because there was already a lot of farm to table. There was already a lot of fried chicken and like biscuits and gravy and meat in threes. And so we definitely had to kind of see what we could do to add our mark on it. But I don't know. I was impressed with the culinary scene that was existing before like we got there as well.
And you could tell that it's a burgeoning scene. So there's a lot of room for growth and a lot of room to, you know, express yourself and be creative and a lot of gaps to be filled in, which is terrific. You know, it's great. Like, as a business opportunity, it was a really solid decision.
Can you talk about some of the restaurants that you admire in Nashville and kind of what made you really develop like a respect for it as a culinary town?
So there's a few. One of them that I think we're both in love with is called Two Tin Jack. And they do like Japanese izakaya, like small plates or whatnot. And we got to meet the owners at an event before the restaurant had opened, and she was amazing. So I fell in love with her, like her personality. And she's like, if you ever need anything, or if you need to reach out, like if you just need like a soundboard, like I'm here. And I was like, that is so freaking sweet. And then it was just like bonus points that her restaurant kicks ass. So that was one thing that I saw that I really liked. Also that it showed like a side of culture in the culinary scene there. So like coming from Chicago, there's like within, you know, a 10 feet radius, there's Japanese, Chinese, Mexican, a diner. There's just a gamut of culture cuisine wise, at a stone's throw. So I was happy to see that was happening in Nashville and that it was delicious. What is like Butcher and Bee was one of your favorite.
Butcher and Bee is great. They do kind of Israeli, Middle Eastern influence small plates, and it's just solid. Brian Weaver he's fantastic as well. So those were two. We went to Catbird Seat.
Oh, Catbird Seat was fancy. Yeah, that was like the molecular gastronomy type of thing. It was like, tasting, whoa. And
the whole
I was like, this is very impressive. And once again, like we were talking to like the chef there, and it doesn't feel like it's like a competitive city when it comes to that. Like they're all very much like it's a community. And so they're like, hey, if you ever need anything, like reach out, here's my number. And I was like, this is crazy. Cause in Chicago, like you keep your cards kind of close to your, like you don't show them. And there, they're just like, oh, this is this. Like, oh, you love that dish? This is the recipe. And I'm like, dang. All right.
Cool. It's great.
I love this.
And the city and the chefs have definitely embraced us with open arms, which is wonderful. So that's been something that's been really pretty outstanding.
Yeah, especially because like whenever we did move there, it was during like 2016, which was like a really tough time, I think, for America. Just mm-hmm. it was kind of being divided a bit between like, you know, a couple of parties. And we were going into the South, which like in like, you know, Chicago or whatever, people are just like, eeks, like, oh, I hope you don't die. See you later. And it's like, eeks, what do you mean? Is it that scary? And so it was nothing like that. Like we were kind of tense for like no reason. And we had actually, asked Manit about that. Like, listen, like Brian and I are a married couple. We've been together 15 years. Do we need to like be very careful about how we describe ourselves? Like, do I just say like, oh, Brian's my roommate and, you know, chef owner? And she's like, absolutely not. I'm a woman. I'm from India. Like, I'm here in the South and I've had no problems. And if anybody has a problem with it, then they're not the guests that we want. And so we can just kindly ask them to leave. And I was like,
I think she said you can tell them to go fuck off.
Okay.
Yeah, that sounds more like Manit.
I don't know if this is a family show.
I think Manit would be happy with you saying that.
Well, then, because that, yeah. And so I was like, okay, we're in cahoots with the right person.
Absolutely,
and thankfully, yeah. We have had zero issues with anything dealing with that issue. So that was kind of something that was on the forefront of our mind whenever we were moving to Nashville.
But yeah, no harm, no foul.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So then as you started to think, conceptualize the Mockingbird, and you had spent a lot of time in the food scene, had been eating around a lot, which by the way was hot chicken on the list early on?
We kind of toyed around with an idea about it, but you don't want to like pander too much.
Yeah.
And
there's already places that are known for their hot chicken. People are going to come to the Mockingbird and be like, oh, we need their hot chicken.
You're like, don't go there. Yeah. So what sort of niches were you trying to fill?
I would,
foods.
Yeah.
A lot of ethnic flavors don't exist in Nashville. So there's smaller ethnic communities than you have in other major metropolitan areas. So there were definitely a lot of flavors that I'm comfortable with or that I love, like all of Latin America, Mexico, and the Middle East, Korea, Japan.
Yeah, so like we said, like some of the earlier restaurants we went to, they only specialized in that one cuisine. And so, like, under one roof, you wouldn't be able to get, like, a gamut of flavors. Like, you know, I have an experimental palate. I like to try different things. With my first course, I may want something that's going to be, like, very French because, you know, my husband's a Francophile. And then for my main course, I may just want a burger. And there was really nothing that offered that variety under one roof without having to jump from restaurant to restaurant. So I think that's what we pinpointed, and we're like, let's work off of that. And thankfully, since we did have our catering company that we did these underground suppers for, our cuisine was inspired Mexican. So every month we did a different cuisine on top of Mexican cuisine. So we did Mexican French, we did Mexican Italian, we did Mexican Canadian. we did like Mexican Indian after we came back from India for our honeymoon. We kind of did like a recap of our flavors that we tasted there and kind of gave our spin to it. So we had already had like an arsenal of recipes that we wanted to put out there that we had already made tried and true through our pop-ups. So yeah.
That's something that Manit does a lot too. With like, she will make Indian food that is very much wrapped up in other cuisines too. Yeah. And this brings me to wanting to ask you, how do you feel about the word fusion?
Oh, the F word. She dropped the F bomb.
I don't know. It's kind of become a dirty word, but I think that it's really useful and symbolic in like the like modern culture that we live in today. Because like society, like if you live in New York or Chicago or LA, like it is like this melting pot of all these different cultures, and you can go to Little Vietnam or Chinatown or Devon Street and have all the Indian food or Ethiopian food. Or
yeah, but once again, they're all segregated. They're not fused. And so right. I think it was like maybe the ADD palette that kind of brought them together. It's like, oh, I love this. I love this. Put it all together. Mm-hmm. Let's see. It works. I think that's kind of what put it together. But yeah, I do try to like shy away from the F word.
Yeah, I was going to ask, like, Brian, would you call the food you cook fusion? Why or why not?
No, we, like, the elevator pitch is that we're a modern diner with global twists on comfort food. Mm-hmm. So.
And then my other question was, like, how, when you're thinking about putting a menu together mm-hmm. and you know that you're going to be borrowing influences and flavors from around the world, things that you enjoy yourself, how do you do that, but then make a menu that feels cohesive to where you can order a starter and a main that seem to be kind of incongruent, but then are actually really good as a pair?
I mean, it's something that we work really hard on, and I sit down with my sous chefs and we work with the farmers that, you know, there's about a third, two thirds of the menu that are super seasonal and they change, you know, 5 to 6 times a year. So we might keep, it'll be a fish, but the setup kind of changes around that. So I don't know, like currently with this iteration, it leaned.
Well, I feel like it's easy to go from like course one Japanese to like course two, you know, pot pie or something along that line, because the flavors are bold, but they're not lasting. Mm-hmm. So it's like you enjoy it in that moment, but it's nothing that's going to like linger to like kill your next course. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's how we've like successfully transitioned the menu and the items from each other. Nothing is like too like overpowering in a certain sense.
And we are taking a lot of comfort foods that people are familiar with and just putting little twists on them. So whether it's short ribs or pot pie. Or
yeah, the bechamel pot pie with truffle butter.
Mm. I think calling it a diner is great because then, like, you go to a diner and you expect to have a little bit of a hodgepodge, but then it's all going to be delicious together.
Yeah. And it's going to be fun.
Yeah.
It's not too serious, but it's something that everyone loves. And you can take your parents and you can go on a date and you can go, like, with just friends, and like that's exactly what we wanted.
Yeah, that's what we envisioned. We just had somebody come in for brunch the other day. They were like, "Oh, we just came back from the gym. Is it okay that we're in here?" I was like, "Sure,
come as you are.
You got money? Yeah, sure enough.
Or even if you don't, because there's also been some people that have been down on their luck that have stopped by and we've like fed them because it's we're human.
How does that work? Do they walk in and say like, "Hey, I've got this much," or
when we first opened, we would have like. Because there's a center that's not too far from us for people that are down on their luck. And when we first opened, like, we had a couple that would come in and they would order just coffee and sit at the bar and try to get change out to pay for it. And it was just like, we're good. It's coffee. And if there's, like, you know, something in the back that we can make that's pretty quick and pretty cost effective, I'm not going to send out like a hanger steak or anything crazy like that and take temperatures. But if there's like, you know, some mac and cheese or something we can whip together, then like bring that out. And it's like far and few between. It's not like he went and told his homies like, "Hey, come over here. They're going to like, you know, feed us for free." It was just something in those moments.
A nice thing to do.
Yeah.
We're not a soup kitchen, but we are human beings.
Yeah. Appreciate that. Not everyone is these days.
Yeah, it's... I could... And, like, my staff was asking me, like, whenever the first time it happened, like, "Hey, you know, are we going to ask this guest to leave?" And I was like, "No. Like, I can't do that. Where is he... Like... But no, we can't do that." So... and it was like, and if it's a problem about, like, a tip, then I'll, you know, give you $5 or something. But, like, don't do that. And I think it quickly, like, the staff saw, like, "Oh, the owners have hearts. Like, this is great." It's like, "No, you don't have to give me a tip. Like, yeah, this person's down on their luck." And so it's like changed that work mode into human mode when it's like situations like that. You know?
So I know Katie's heading to Nashville soon. So soon.
On
so behalf soon. Of her, obviously she has the Mockingbird on her list. I know this. What other places would you recommend in Nashville that are your current favorites?
Folk.
Folk is wonderful.
Yep.
Philip Krasniak, he started with Rolf and Daughters, and now they have Folk, and they're buddies of ours.
Chef Deb at Etch. That's like a fancier one.
I was at Etch my last trip to Nashville, and
it's so delicious.
She is a hoot.
Have you got
Deb
to meet
Hackett.
Her?
Yeah. I did meet her that day, but we've had her on previously. She's amazing. Shout out to Deb.
It's so amazing. Yeah. I love her. She was like one of the other like first personalities we met in Nashville, and I was like, sign me the heck up. Like, this is a wild train that I want to be part of.
Yeah.
We at Food and Wine Festival like 3 years back. At Charleston Food and Wine, there was like an after party for like all the like chefs and restaurateurs of the South, and Deb was like at our table, and I was just like kind of freaking out. I was like, "Oh my God, this is so cool." Like, by the end of the night, she was on the table like dancing, and it was like it was so fantastic. I was like, "You go, yes."
This wasn't the Williams Sonoma party, was it?
It was at Butcher and Bee, party 3 years back. And
we missed that one.
Yeah.
Oh,
damn.
It did. I think it started at like midnight.
That sounds about right.
Yeah. It was
people were living their best lives.
Heck yeah. That's what you do at Charleston.
Yes.
Yeah, Charleston
you
do. Is.
And then.
Okay.
Do you have any more?
I'll take them. Give them all to me.
What else did we say? Etch Folk.
Fifth and Taylor is good.
Fifty Taylor is really delicious.
City House is always.
City House is my
that's favorite.
Yeah.
I love it.
Katie can't say Nashville in a sentence without also saying City House.
It's true. Really? It just comes out. It comes out.
Yeah. Germantown is like, it's just crazy right now. Mm-hmm.
Lyra is over there.
Yeah. Lyra is there. We went there for your birthday dinner.
We did. It was delicious.
So many great places.
What about bars? Favorite bars?
Attaboy, which I think you'll have an Attaboy
here.
We do have
an Attaboy, except I can't get into it because I don't have 2 hours to stand on the sidewalk.
You'll probably get into the Nashville one a lot quicker.
Yeah.
Old Glory is fantastic. It's in like this old factory. I believe.
So cool. It was an old, like, turn of the century, like, steam, like, mill, like, or something.
Okay, not like a bathhouse, which was what I was picturing.
No.
Unfortunately.
No.
Okay. An industrial.
What is her, like, one of the owners is, we met her at a Passover dinner, like, 2 weeks ago, and I could not, like, stop staring at her. She's so beautiful, and I was like, I have to be your friend. I love your bar, and I immediately, like, I love your energy. And I kind of, like, made it a point to have to make her text me so we can hang out, which I still need to follow up on that. Yeah, it's an OG. What is the other
one? L.A. Jackson at the Thompson Hotel is really nice to go up there and get a little view of the city.
Nice.
There's a couple downtown bars that, I mean, it depends, like, what, like, are you going to, like,
get down and dirty.
Get down and dirty. Are you gonna do like the honky tonk?
Well, like just hypothetically, if there were like a wedding after party, the after after party, or the after 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 party.
Miss Lonnie's, the karaoke bar.
Ambitious.
Yeah, it's on Printer's Alley. It's like a karaoke bar that has a dance floor in front of it, so everybody just dances no matter what song you're singing. Like, they're just, like, dancing their asses off.
We only do private room karaoke here.
No.
This is not private room. This is a fully owned display, huh?
No, it's Kitty Corner to Skull's Rainbow Room.
Which is a burlesque show. That's really cool. And their old-fashioned there is, like, it's killer.
Yeah, it's pretty solid.
So. Where else do we go? We really don't have a life, because it turns out running a restaurant's very time-consuming.
Especially when you do brunch.
Yes.
Turns out.
So we live within the four walls of...
Sounds about right.
Yeah, of the restaurant. But whenever people come in from out of town is where we get torn away from the restaurant. Mm-hmm. And so, like, it's like a blessing and a curse, because it's like, well, we're going to go ahead and leave the restaurant to our team, and they're gonna have to handle it, because we have to go out. Like, our parents are in town. We gotta go hit the town with them. So it's a lot of fun. But the drag bar is also a ton of fun. That's what you should do.
What's it called?
It's called Play. And they do drag shows on the weekends. And the drag in the South is unlike any other drag you've seen before in your life.
Just next level.
It's next level. There used to be, like, one of the drag queens that's on RuPaul right now, she's like in the top five, used to be the main performer there. What the heck is her name?
What about the Blissful Union of Drag and Brunch?
Oh.
That's
at Susie Wong's.
Yeah, it exists.
I tend to keep
what,
like,
about
my,
you guys?
My,
would you do
pantyhose
like
and eggs separate?
Yeah.
I don't know. it's just kind of a rule I live by.
We don't have a lot of rules.
So you don't like the church crowd?
No.
The Sunday church crowd. The old ladies with their hairspray and their nylons.
Two of them easy, the nylon on the side.
I only like my drag at night. I don't know why.
I don't know. Some liquid courage to build up enough stamina to.
Yeah, but there's a great bar scene that's happening in Nashville, and it's even got us. Like, last night, we went to Indochine to have dinner, and loved the attitude there. It was amazing. Like, they were so mean to me. I was like, oh my God, this is great.
That sounds terrible.
I know, but I was like, I feel like I'm getting this, like, New York experience you only, like, hear about. And it was just like, oh, feed it to me. This is great. be mean to me. And I ordered, like, this, like, bourbon on the rocks or whatever. A friend of mine that I've known for, like, 20 years was at dinner with us. And Manit, she was there with us, too. And she was like, oh, that's such a butch drink to be ordering. Because usually I'd order, like, a mojito or some type of, like, martini of sorts. And the South wears off on you. Like, you just, the bourbon becomes your blood.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, you need it.
We're fully behind agendering drinks here.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I love that. Yeah, so get ready for some bourbon in Nashville, because that's the thing.
I'm there.
Yeah, it's so going to be amazing.
Bourbon, honky tonk, and drags.
All right. Yeah. Well, I'm going to be seeing you guys together again soon if you still want to hang out with me after our next segment, which is
trivia. We have some quick trivia for you.
Your faces right
this
now.
This was not on.
Were you not
don't
briefed
worry.
On this?
Need more liquid courage.
Yes, you do. You're welcome to. We have a full bar here at HRN.
Wait, is this
Studios.
Like truth or dare?
No.
But good idea. Come back.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, we'll do that next time.
For next time.
Absolutely.
So we do trivia every Thursday on a happy hour. Okay. But fortunately for you, you are not alone in this grilling. You have teammates. Hannah, have you seen the questions? I also have not seen the questions. So Hannah and I are on your team.
Yes.
And you're going to do great.
Okay.
Is it history or is it like...
Well,
what is it?
Funny, you should ask. So we'd like to get inspired by our guests to write some trivia, but it can never be anything that you're like too knowledgeable about. So
it's a little bit like not my job.
Okay. So life.
Oh, this is great.
It's about life. Life is just not my job.
It is inspired by the name of your restaurant, The Mockingbird.
Yes. Okay.
As we know, the Mockingbirds are famous for copying the songs of other birds.
Yes, yes, yes.
So this is trivia about foods pretending to be other foods.
Got it. I love it.
Okay.
Great.
Yeah.
I'm glad you're excited.
Yeah.
All right. Question number one. What root was used as a substitute for coffee in New Orleans during the Civil War when coffee supplies ran low and has become part of New Orleans-style coffee today?
Chicory.
Correct.
Hey.
Good job. Question number two. What fragrant oil often drizzled on French fries or crostini is often made with chemical flavoring rather than the fungi it's named for?
Truffle.
Correct.
You're doing way too well at this. we need to make them harder.
Question number three. Burger King announced in April that it would release a vegan Whopper made with a patty from which popular meat substitute company?
Impossible Burger.
Correct. Yeah. Cleaning up.
I know.
Sweeping it.
Question number four. What is the egg white substitute known as aquafaba made of?
Chickpea liquid.
Correct.
And need to make harder trivia.
Well, I used it at the restaurant. Class,
so. What did you make?
We make a fancy sauce for the hamburger out of aquafaba. So it goes on our, we have a vegan Reuben that we make house-made seitan, kind of in the corned beef style. And then we...
Seitan? Hail seitan?
The taco is all kale seitan.
All kale seitan.
Kale and seitan.
On Tuesdays only, we do Taco Tiki Tuesdays. And that's Taco like, Tiki you can Tuesday. Only get that taco on Tuesday, and it's all kale seitan.
Kat, just kidding. I'm actually not coming back from Nashville. You'll be fine, right?
I figured that would happen.
Yeah.
I'll meet you there.
Okay.
We're moving HR in. No big deal. All right. Last question. In a 2013 episode of This American Life.
I thought you were going to say, in a world.
In a world.
In a world.
I'm sorry. I think I'm rephrasing this wrong. Let me start over. A 2013 episode of This American Life called Doppelgangers included a segment investigating a rumor that what popular fried appetizer was being substituted with calamari. Pork bung?
Calamari.
Correct.
Yes. I love Ira Glass.
Yeah.
We do too.
Yes.
They Ira, if you're
here
listening.
From Chicago.
I don't think
they're all the whole
WBEZ?
Not WBEZ, but no. Ira Glass and the American Life.
Yeah.
They move.
They're still on WBEZ, right?
Yeah.
They just record it here.
Yeah.
Very confusing.
Yeah, because I think for like your 26th birthday, we went to don't tell me.
Nerd alert.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not nerd. That's we're those
you're in good company.
No, I'm not. I just went with my boyfriend at the time.
I was
like, this is so boring.
So you guys will love
Brian,
our favorite
we're here for you.
You guys will love our favorite joke. So, you know, like we're a nonprofit radio station, so we're kinda like NPR, except that NPR stands for No Pizza Radio. Because of Roberta?
Mikey!
Oh, okay. I was like...
It didn't land the way I thought it would.
I know. It's our best dad joke.
Yes, because we're in a pizza place.
Exactly.
Okay.
He's pretty.
Yeah. I thought you were going to say some kind of joke like, oh, who is the person that would think something is... disgusting, like, oh, Terry Gross. I don't know. I was expecting that. Yeah. I love Terry Gross.
Well, he's pretty is going to be the name of this episode, I think. So something great came out of that.
Oh my God.
Yeah, to like further plant our roots in Nashville, we just filmed an episode of House Hunters. Where,
stop.
Yeah.
You're on it?
Yeah.
Speaking of fangirls.
God.
Yeah. So
I was going to ask what else you were signing him up for. House now Hunters. I have my answer.
And Bobby Flay. I signed him up for Bobby Flay as well.
Our
PR company had no idea that it happened. And
you'd be a great stage mom.
Wait.
Okay. You are a great stage husband.
What would be the term? There's got to be another term for it.
I don't know. Like a pageant mom?
Pageant spouse?
Watch out, Brian. You're going to have a sash and a crown.
I know. Choreography is coming.
Oh, yeah.
Don't worry. We have more drinks.
Yeah, we did. We just filmed that episode. It wrapped up like 2 weeks ago.
It's intense.
Did you?
It's like 60 hours of filming.
Oh, my God.
Whoa. Yeah.
Did you actually buy a house?
Yeah.
Through the process. Okay.
Yeah, sure enough.
So it's real.
It's
so
real.
Like, worth it.
The only thing staged is the houses.
Brian's face.
Well,
right now.
No, the houses were real. We just had to, like, yeah, we. Because we saw like 12 houses or so, but we only went to like 3 of them with camera crews. Mm. But it was intense. So
when is it airing?
Probably in a couple of months. They haven't given us the official date yet. I think
you'll be the first to know.
Please let us know.
I think Kat's going to know anyway.
Oh my God. The only thing I love more than House Hunters is the tiny House Hunters because I love how they're always like, I want to get a tiny house. And then they're like, I don't know. The kitchen's kind of small. It's like you are shopping for a tiny house.
What the? Yeah.
What is wrong with you? Well, I have 4 kids. They'll all sleep on the floor.
Uh-huh. They'll be fine. And like, we won't hear them complain from underneath us.
Also, I didn't click on it, but I was scrolling through Guide yesterday, and there was something called Zombie Tiny House. What? I don't know what it was.
Excuse me.
I didn't watch it. Will wouldn't let me click on it, but I need to know. So if anybody out there, if you know what Zombie Tiny House is about,
please. That's a real thing.
Let me know.
I have to go.
I'll be right back.
Yeah. That's the next thing you should sign up for. You guys need to buy a tiny house that has like paranormal investigations happening.
Haunted tiny house.
Yes. Like, we'll check off all the boxes. LGBT. Yes. Latino. Yes. Chef. Yes. Zombie.
Yes.
Done.
Werewolf.
Done.
What more do you want? Dragons? Yes. We can do it.
I can
we
do
got
it.
A dragon.
Yes. I can do it.
In a world full of dragons.
Can we do a spinoff of our show that's this group?
Yes!
Commenting on pop culture and getting more ideas of what shows that Brian and Mikey can sign up for?
For that show, I want a mic. Yeah. It's hard. You guys are so witty. I'm like, I have interjections, but I'm 3 feet away from the mic. Yeah. I'm not funny enough.
You need to sit closer, Hannah.
We're waiting for our own show.
Oh my gosh, don't wait any longer. You were in the perfect place.
Let's do it. Yay. I told you, like, there. So with all the new industry, with all the new restaurants that are happening in Nashville and all the industry people are moving in from all over the country, I was like, we need a sounding board. Like, we need, like, a place where all the industry people can get together and just share their grievances because, like, therapy is too much. It's too expensive.
Podcasting is the new therapy.
I like that idea. So I want to start, like, this shift happens. And like it would be like on Sunday nights, anybody from the industry is invited to come up and they have 5 minutes to get up and tell their
it's like the moth.
Their zaniest stories of it could either be very sad, it could be very happy, it could be just a moment that they need to share with everybody to like, is this normal? And get it off their chest.
We're going to have to cut this part of the show because it's too good of an idea to share publicly.
Yeah. We already trademarked it. Go away, everybody. So, you heard it here first.
Shift happens.
Yeah. That's gold. Okay. That's the best place we can end on.
Stay tuned.
Nobody better steal that.
Stay tuned, people. Mm-hmm. Oh, my gosh. So Katie's going to have more work for her when she goes down to Nashville because you guys have to work this idea out some more.
Yeah.
Done.
Oh my gosh, that's so exciting.
We have some logistics to play.
All right.
Guys, I am so excited. So we always say when we've had like previous guests on HR and Happy Hour, you're always welcome to come back and co-host, but also you're always welcome to create a spinoff. So we have some things to chat about, but this has been so much fun. Thank you.
Oh my
God. It has been an absolute blast. I wish we could keep you here forever, except that I'm excited to go see you in Nashville. So we need you to go back. Mikey and Brian, it has been an absolute pleasure having you today.
Oh, this is pleasure's all ours. This is so much fun.
Yeah, this has been fantastic. Thank you.
All right. Well, thanks to our engineer Amanda.
Thanks, Amanda,
for holding down the fort and rapid fire correct answers. No buzzers this week. Man.
Yeah, not a single...
We didn't say this, but you won trivia.
You did win trivia.
I hope that you win with Bobby Flay. Let's keep that winning streak going.
Yes.
Ooh. Positive vibes. Positive vibes.
Woo. All right. Well, thank you, Hannah. Thank you, Katie.
Thank you, Kat.
That's our show. We'll see you next week.
Thursday.
Adios.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.